Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, Guy, Nick Mason, Sourceful of Secrets, of which we are two-fifths, right? We're going back out on the road in the summer across the UK.
We are. It's all of June, so brace yourself.
What's it called?
It's called the Set the Control Tour. What a brilliant name. Who do you think could have come up with such a great name for a tour, Gary?
I wonder. I think I'm looking at him, right? But then I did come up with Nick Mason, Sourceful of Secrets.
You did, and in fact, that came up in a podcast then because you were inspired by Woody Woodman's U-Boat, weren't you?
I was, yes.
Anyway, but enough of that.
So, join Nick, Guy, Lee Harris, Don Beacon, and me as we celebrate the early years with, you know, that incredible, it's an incredible body of work, isn't it? The early Pink Floyd. It goes up to just before Dark Side of the Moon.
Goes up to 1972, with all the film soundtracks, all the Sid stuff, stuff you've never heard, stuff that no one's ever
heard,
frankly.
Obviously.
Echoes is the big sort of, you know, what is that? What would you call it?
Magnum opus.
Yeah, I love a Magnum, don't you?
Yeah, I never met Magnum. Anyway, tickets are on sale now and you can buy yours at myticket.co.uk.
And Kilimanjaro Live presents Nick Mason's Sourceful of Secrets, the Set the Control Tour.
Hello, Gary.
Hello, Guy.
Now, with our guest today, your inner Bill Frindle must be basically wetting himself at the thought of all the stats. And actually, sorry, we should point out, because we do have an international audience, don't we? Yeah. A lot of people might not know who Bill Frindle is.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain, Gary?
Well, there's a thing over here called Test Match Special, TMS, and it's basically all day radio describing what's happening in the Test Match.
Cricket.
And Bill, who I think is no longer with us, was famously one of the commentators. Well, he didn't commentate.
No, he wasn't the commentator. He was the stats man. And his thing was he could access any statistic about any game ever, right just then.
Yeah, you'd hear the ledger and the dust flying everywhere as he turned the pages looking for who last held the record for hitting a pigeon or whatever it might be. So Guy says this because I do come up with a few stats now and again. The trouble is Diane Warren is just got the most enormous stats I've ever seen.
And you've seen a few.
And I have seen a few and I've read a few. I mean, she's had 14 Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
And hasn't won any, but was given an honorary Oscar just recently because of all this incredible nomination stuff.
She was cheated in 2016. Sorry, I've said it.
Well, you can bring that up later.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start. How many single? I mean, said 9 US number ones, 32 top 10 hits in the US. How Do I, which she wrote for Leanne Rimes, is number 6 on the 100 all-time biggest played. That is a deceiving chart now. I have to say, and I want a conversation with Diane about that, because that at number one now is The Weeknd with the Lights single. But, you know, that's because of streaming. Streaming has sort of deformed the charts slightly. But, I mean, she's got everything. 2 Golden Globes. I could go on, but could you just say who she's written songs for?
Leanne Rimes, Aerosmith, Alice Cooper, Meatloaf, Lady Gaga, Belinda Carlisle, Laura Branigan, Cheap Trick, Beyonce. The way to put it for our listeners is, if you have ever come home from a party in a minicab, you were listening to Diane Warren.
You sent that to me on a text, didn't you, earlier?
I did. And I
think my reply to you on that was that you say to the guy, "Why have you come this way?" And he says, "Sir, I didn't want to get you home before the coda." Which is the kind of cabs we get in.
Well, yes, kind of cabs you get in, mate. But anyway, so yes, listen, Diane Warren, she is the ultimate sort of ubiquitous great pop songwriter. She ends every film in her own inimitable way.
Well, she's been on 100. Her music has been in 100 movies. So I'm a bit sort of overwhelmed by all this, and I think we need to show our listeners that she's probably just a human being.
She is a human being, and much like other human beings, she might enjoy signing up to Rock on Tours Extra, which you can do at rockontours.com.
God, you're so slick.
I'm so slick.
You're so slick. It's like you're like the Peter Powell of podcasting.
Right. It's amazing. It's almost as if our producer held something up to remind me to say that.
Yeah. So sign up and you get extras. And Guy and I have been working hard at doing some nice extras for you.
Well, you have indeed.
You get to hear about if we're ever going to perform live again or any events that might happen that you'd like to go to, you get the first shot at getting a ticket. Anyway, forget all that. Let's get her on.
Welcome to the Rock on Tours.
Okay, guys, I'm ready.
But it's a big tune for sure. I actually wrote that originally for Tina Turner.
Of course, I had gone and found Joni Mitchell down in Florida and brought her back.
I've listened to a few of them and they've been really good, man. I'm sitting in the back of the car coming into London, they're brilliant.
That caused a big problem in the band, actually. I was having too much fun.
Thank you guys for still being around, still making music, still being into it, and doing this podcast. It's fabulous.
Well, I get the feeling that us three should go for a pint. That's what I think.
I'm in a band now. It's called Roxy Music.
You know this thing about the 10,000 hours of experience?
Oh, yeah. To
get good at something. When we recorded Arnold Lane, we'd done about 50 hours.
The Rock on Tours podcast with Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt.
Keep on rocking!
Yay!
Hi, guys.
Hi, Tyann.
Wow, you look fantastic. What a great setting.
Oh, it's not real. By the way, I loved Spandau Ballet. So.
Oh.
We'll start there.
Thank you. That's eased me into this because we are so thrilled to have you on because,
oh,
I mean,
why?
You know, just your legendary status alone.
No, that's not, I'm not, no.
We've had, since we started this podcast a few years ago, I think we've had three acts that you've written for, Belinda,
yeah,
obviously.
At least.
Alice.
And he hasn't even checked that. We've just assumed.
Alice Cooper,
yeah, I did,
Belinda
I did
Carlisle.
Not one of my favorite songs, but I love Alice Cooper. I probably did the worst song ever, one of not his best songs.
Actually, while we're on that, we can mention that because I noticed it was co-written but with Desmond Child, who's obviously another huge songwriter.
Yeah, Desmond's awesome. Bed of Nails, yikes.
How did you co-write?
I mean, I very rarely co-write, so I that was, you know, that was a long time ago. I mean, I usually write by myself, but, you know, Desmond and I have done some great songs together, and I love him, and a big Alice Cooper fan. You know, that was kind of fun, but that wasn't one of my big shining moments as a songwriter.
And Paul Stanley we've had on.
Yeah, I've done some great Kiss songs. I think I wrote the only outside song they ever did, which was Nothing Can Keep Me From You, that was in Detroit Rock City, in that the Kiss movie.
But that's quite a thing of yours, Dan, isn't it? That there's a lot of people where you seem to write when no one else gets in, but you're the person who comes in and writes a song.
Like Aerosmith. Yeah, it's, well, you know.
Exactly.
I love that. I think that's, you know, that's pretty amazing. Like that, because these people don't need me. You know, whether it's, you know, Aerosmith or like Willie Nelson did a song of mine a few years ago. It's like, it's pretty cool. Or, you know, yeah, it's just, it's such a, like, it's a sign of respect and a sign that the song is really good, that it can get past that, you know.
Well, there's two things going on, isn't there? There's the, obviously the A&R man wants to have you in, giving them possibly their biggest single on the album. But also I think a lot of artists now just simply want to sing your songs. You know, they want to be part of everything you've ever done.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, you know, I mean, not all of them. some of them, and I'm so grateful because, like, I think I'm working with more, you know, doing better work than ever and working with more artists than ever, you know, so I feel like I'm just getting started, really. And I'm always grateful, you know, to work with great artists that they want to work with me, so.
Are you in your legendary office where you work now?
Yeah, my legendary office is down the street there, and
Where no one is allowed. It seems like your fortress of solitude.
Yeah, it, I've been there for, you know, since like 1985, and my company was there too, and my writing room, I have actually two writing rooms there. And during COVID, I kind of loved it because no one was there but me. the silver lining of COVID. And I got so much done there. And then, you know, my company, when everybody came back, I bodybuilding down the street, which is where I am right now, which where my studios are. And so everybody's here, but I still like it over there. So I'm there a lot of the time.
And you're sort of, the people who work for you respect that. They don't come knocking on your door. The phone isn't meant to go, or do you turn the phone off? I mean, what is your process?
At the other office? No, I just have my cell phone. I don't even know if the phones work there. I mean, I have the whole floor, but it's just me. So I really like that. Yeah.
So just, what's it like? Because I hear rumors that, you know, you won't let anything be touched. You know, it's just, it's a cave.
It's like a house of cards in there. If you touch one thing, the whole, you know, I've never really cleaned it or anything. So it's a mess. It's kind of disgusting. You know, but I like it. You know?
And how techie are you? Is it like a guitar into a tape?
How techie am I? I use
laptop.
A Walkman and a cassette. That's not how techie.
Bravo.
I do. Brilliant. And cassettes are cool again. So I guess I'm, you know, all of a sudden it came around. But I also use my phone. I don't know how to use voice note because it keeps erasing. So I do know how to visually, you know, so I'll do videos of you know, what I'm writing, you know. So I do that. So it's not just the Walkman anymore. So I've graduated to using a phone, you know.
You know, it's just as a songwriter, I'm keen to pick your brain. Oh.
Oh, you like my ringtone?
Is that another song you've just written?
It's Belinda.
Belinda.
Oh, Belinda.
Belinda.
We'll talk.
That was the
we'll
other name. That's that. Who else we had.
We'll talk
on.
About that in a minute. But yeah. You know, I just sort of interested in that process of, is it really you go to the piano or go to the guitar and you sit and you get, you know, obviously the first stuff that comes out is very front brain conscious, and then suddenly
I don't think about it. I just do it and I'm, you know, sometimes I have a drum beat, or I program a beat, or I just, you know, have something I like and I'll just start playing along. You know, it's just, I don't think about it. I just do it. And I have, like, you know, I write titles down all the time or ideas of songs, you know, and just kind of just go with what feels right. You know, it's all about, for me, what feels right, you know?
Yeah. Is it led by a title normally for you?
I mean, I like it to be, but not always. Sometimes it's just, you know, a chord progression that sounds cool
Do you like writing to a brief?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do. I love writing songs for movies. You know, I'll read a script, or I'll see like a rough of a movie, and my subconscious, you know, kind of gets to work, and I kind of just write what I want to see in that movie, you know. So it's, I love doing it. I'm, you know, I just lost my 14th Academy Award this year.
Yeah, but
so
we mentioned that on the intro.
I'm consistent, but it's awesome.
You've been robbed in that department.
I mean,
definitely.
You know what? I honestly think it's winning by being nominated. I mean, I'm not just saying that because they only pick five songs out of hundreds.
2016, I'm sorry, and that performance that Gaga did.
Yeah, that was that was the one that.
I mean, come on.
I know. That was, I mean, that was one of the best songs I ever wrote. And
yeah
the Gaga's performance was, you know, stunning, you know. All those, mm-hmm. you know, survivors of sexual abuse, and people weren't even talking about that then. So it was, but she hit notes that I didn't even know a human voice could hit, full voice. That performance was stunning. Mm-hmm. And then I remember sitting there, and that was the year everybody, you know, said, you're winning. And I kind of thought I did. And then it was a commercial break after the performance, and the winner is, and I went, the fuck? You know, I have to admit, I just kind of went, you know, I was like, you know, I wish all those voters could vote again after a performance, because, you know. But you know what? It just, it ended up winning an Emmy, because it was also nominated for an Emmy, and that was cool, because I'd never won that before. But, you know, that song was, you know, it was culturally really important, too.
What was the movie? It was The Hunting Ground, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was about sexual abuse on campus, but the song became bigger than that, because that song could be also about anything you go through, you know. And more people, you know, a lot of people come up to me and say that song really helped them.
Well, that was the kind of thing in that performance, because all the survivors were on the stage were from various types of abuse, weren't they? It was, I mean, it was incredibly powerful.
It was, that's to me one of the best performances like I've ever seen in my life, not even because I wrote the song.
But do you remember what song won? Obviously you must do.
Yes. It was a James Bond song sung by.
Sam Smith. That's lazy voting, I think. But when you wrote,
it's so nice. Sorry, Gary. I'm really sorry to interrupt. But it's just so nice to hear someone actually be honest about an award about not getting an award.
I have to admit, I was kind of bummed about that. But you know what? It just, you know.
But just break down that. Writing of that song, it's Till It Happens to You, right?
Yeah.
Was that with Lady Gaga?
No. I mean, I wrote the song.
But did she know she was going to be doing this? She was going to be singing it. Was she in your mind when you were doing it?
No, I wrote it for the movie, and I remember calling her, and I'd heard that she'd gone through, she'd been, you know, raped by one of her producers, or so I'd heard something on Howard Stern. I thought, you know what, Gaga and I talked about doing something. Through the years, I called her and I texted her. I have to play something. I played her the song, and she was sobbing at the end of it, and she just was so moved by it, and ended up doing it. But produced a beautiful record. I mean, that record was just a genius record, and she sang it so well. So that was our collaboration, really, on that song. And
What about in the production? Sometimes are you having to let the song go, and do you ever get sort of, oh my God, I never thought it would be produced like that, and it's not quite how I would have liked it? Or have you got a firm hand in it?
You know, I don't really have a firm hand in it, because I look at it, this is my song and your record, with any artist I work with. I like to have, sometimes I'll have more of a say than others, but it's not my record, you know. I mean, if I'm there and the melody, if someone's getting something really wrong, or, you know, I'm kind of a stickler, you know, for getting the lyrics and melody right. But then I also have to step away a bit and go, you know, maybe you're going to make it better. Maybe that melody change or that slight lip change could, you know, improve the song. So it's like, you know, once the actor, you know, reads a script right there, maybe they'll say it a cooler way. It's their record, you know, my song, but, you know, it's a collaboration. After it's out of my hands and into your voice, it's yours.
But because you like your just guitar into the Walkman. Cassette, very basic thing, but then that's for getting your ideas down. Yeah. But then when a song is written and it's going to go to an artist, then I'm presuming there's a sort of more elaborate demo that gets
we do demos here. We produce demos that sound like records, you know, in my studio.
And so is there a team there who are just working?
I have some really good producers. And then there's you know, some of these demos become records. You know, a lot of people don't have imagination, as you know. But sometimes I love, if I'm meeting with an artist, I like to just play it on the piano or guitar, you know, without all the production, and just kind of strip it down. And then I'll play the demo maybe, and, you know, or maybe I won't even play the demo. Just maybe, like, you know, let's see where you take it.
You know what I love when I was reading up about you, Diane, was you're still so keen in getting to the artist and selling your product.
Yeah.
You know, I know that recently there are two things I'm going to mention. You'll have to tell us about them. One is you fortunately sitting next to an artist on a plane. And then the other one was, you know, when Cher says that you chased her into an Al-Anon meeting with a song.
After an Al-Anon, I had something that was really great for her, you know. I mean, I just don't give up when I believe in something. And the plane was Common sitting behind me. Was that you're talking
about? The rapper.
Because I'd written Stand Up for Something that Andra Day was going to sing. And, you know, it's kind of like that 60s kind of Sam Cooke vibe. And I thought, like, I want to put a great rapper on that cassette and throw it. Different time zones in it, really, right? Because the 60s didn't have rap at that time. So what if you kind of put that together? And I thought, you know, the perfect rapper is Common, because he has something to say. That song was, you know, had something to say. And it just so happened, like, literally the next week, he was, you know, kind of a captive audience, because he was sitting right in back of me on a plane. But I started singing it to him. And then, you know, he said, oh, my God, that sounds great. And I sent him the song as soon as we landed. And I got 10 calls from him, the missed calls that I had my phone off, and then, you know, so that was great. So I'm an opportunist like that, you know, like a good opportunist. It's just like there's always an opportunity.
Hanging around outside elevators waiting to jump in when they get in and give them the pitch.
Anything for my songs.
If you're using a rapper, do you accept that they're going to write their rap lyrics.
Oh yeah, I was never going to write Common's rap. Like, no, that's it. Like, I'm not a rapper, you know. So he was a collaborator on it.
Yeah. So if you're writing for an artist in mind, do you have to sort of soak up what they've done, and then do you find yourself trying to sort of tailor it in their, you know, in a bespoke way?
I don't tailor a song for one artist because I want it to be that a lot of artists can do it.
Oh, that's interesting. So, because I mean, a lot of your songs, which I guess that's the strength of the artist, isn't it? If it sounds like an artist.
Well, yeah, that's the magic.
Bringing their thing to.
Magic. I didn't maybe write it for them, but sounds like nobody else could have done it. You know, I didn't write "I Don't Want to Miss a Thing" for Steven Tyler or Aerosmith. I wrote the song. It turned out to find the best voice for it. I have a record coming really soon, which I think is one of the best things I've ever done. I'm not going to say anything about it yet, but it's an artist that never does other people's songs, but you can't imagine anybody else ever singing the song.
Wow.
Is it Gary?
Yeah.
Thank you. Right, yeah.
Maybe we'll do something. I love it.
Hey, listen. Thank you. You know, a good example of what you just said is Cheap Trick, when you did Wherever Would I Be, and then that goes and gets covered again by Dusty Springfield and Daryl Hall.
How cool is that, right? First of all, my favorite female artist of all time is Dusty Springfield.
Yeah.
So that right there was a huge, huge honor. And then, like, you know, Daryl Hall's a great songwriter. Cheap Trick, you know, Rick Nielsen's a great songwriter. So yeah, that was just amazing to have that happen with that song.
But does someone like Cheap Trick come into the room and go, oh, look, I'd like to talk to you before you write the song? Or you just send them something thought was appropriate?
I wrote a song with them called Ghost Town same time, and I landed Wherever Would I Be. They did that, I think they did that before Daryl Hall and Dusty, right?
Yeah.
And that was done for While You Were Sleeping, for that movie with Daryl and Dusty. I was so excited that Dusty Springfield did a song of mine. I had two songs on her last album.
So do you meet her?
I never met her. Just I talked to her on the phone. Well. But she's just, she was my favorite singer ever. Like her voice, it's soul. It was so warm and soulful. I just love her.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This episode of Rock on Tours is sponsored by AG1, the daily nutrition supplement.
AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 vitamins, minerals, and other vital ingredients like gut-friendly bacteria, antioxidants, and much more.
Just one scoop of AG1 daily has all the nutrients you need to support your mental performance, energy levels, heart health, and immune system.
To be honest, it's pretty vital stuff for us, because when you've got a life on the road and you're short of time, or you're too busy to plan and prepare healthy meals, or you're getting your podcast together, you're being shouted at, and it's just a nightmare, AG1 gives me all the good stuff and helps keep my energy levels where I need, ready for showtime or doing the podcast, and with a nice vanilla taste.
It keeps me focused, feeling good, feeling healthy with its daily dose of vitamin C and zinc. And it's so easy to use. Just one scoop a day gives me over 70 carefully selected ingredients. Simple.
Trusted by Olympians, F1 drivers and the Rock on Tours. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription.
Go to drinkag1.com/rockontours. That's drinkag1.com patreon.com/rockonteurs. Check it out.
Now, I'm really sorry, but I'm itching to get back to how you started, because I can't find anything that different on being a songwriter.
I started by doing it, just like all you guys. We started out because we loved music. Details. I just listened to the radio constantly.
But was it guitar first? Was it
on a guitar?
Because your dad got you a 12-string, didn't he? He was very supportive.
When I was 15, but I had a little guitar from Mexico when I was like 11. And then I bribed my dad into getting me the 12-string. So I wrote everything on there. And then someone randomly said the piano is the songwriter's instrument. So I go, I'm going to teach myself piano. So I did, enough to get by. I mean, I'm not very good guitar player or piano player, but I could get around.
Can you remember what the first songs you learned were? Or did you just start writing stuff immediately?
I just kind of started writing stuff. When I was a big Beatles fan, like 2 years ago, the coolest thing happened to me, where Ringo asked me for a song. And do you know Here's to the Nights? You know about that?
Yeah. I don't know about it, but I know this. Yeah.
It was so cool.
I've read about it.
So he asked me for a song. I go, well, I have an idea, because it's such a cool sing-along song. I go, let's get some of your old friends and get some new friends. All I kept thinking in my mind, Paul McCartney, the two Beatles song. And he asked Paul, and he was the first person to say yes. I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to have two Beatles on one of my fucking songs. And then all these other people came on board, like Dave Grohl and Chris Stapleton, Sheryl Crow, Lenny Kravitz. I'm probably leaving off people because there's a bunch of people on that song. But all in my mind, all I could think about was,
It's like pigeons landing at Trafalgar Square. Once one or two come down, all of them want to come down and feed.
But all you want to look
and
at is the two
Beatles
of them
land.
And they're Paul and Ringo.
Yeah. Everyone
it's
wants
like,
to
oh,
come.
Those other pigeons are really cool, but those other two are like, they're beetle pigeons.
Beetle pigeons. I love that you keep playing your latest single on your ringtone.
I know.
You've got your PR person ringing you just every now and again to let us hear it, right?
No, it's someone annoying the shit out of me. but it's a good ringtone to hear during this. We'll get some more airplay. Come on.
So I think we were going back to what Guy was asking, and was it, obviously you mentioned the Beatles, but you wanted to be a songwriter. Was it people like Carole King, the Brill Building? Was it Bacharach?
Yes. Who was the Brill Building, Carole King. It was that whole era of Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil, Burt Bacharach, Hal David, Jeff Berry, Ellie Greenwich, Mann and Weil, Lieber Stoller.
This is a kind of a Jewish...
Yes, it's a Jewish, thing.
What is that?
I feel like I feel that too. I feel like it's that I'm connected with all those people. And Irving Berlin's my hero, He wrote songs by himself and owned his publishing. And
Sammy Cohn.
Yeah, Sammy Cohn. I mean, there's some pretty good Jewish songwriters out there. So add me to the list someday. I'm happy.
Was it not wanting to be a performer? Was that?
Oh, I didn't want to be a performer.
Wanting to
make
music.
No. The first money I made, I was asked to stop playing. My friend's dad's friend owned a restaurant, and they thought, well, maybe someone will discover you there. I played one song, and they gave me $15 to stop. So the first money I made was being told to shut the fuck up, basically.
But you've started writing songs, and I think, I know Laura Branigan was your first, but what were the doors you knocked on?
I knocked on every door. I just kept knocking on doors when they wouldn't let me in. I tried to kick them down or go through the roof or through the window, whatever. You just got to keep doing it. There's always an obstacle, and some of the fun is getting through the obstacles.
Just that first song was lyrics, wasn't it? You were writing lyrics.
No, I wasn't
on
that one song. I just wrote lyrics. So I was always writing words of music, just on that one song, Solitaire. So I don't even consider that even though technically it was my first top 10, I don't consider that my first hit. My first hit really was Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge, 1985, which I did write words and music for, and then so
much like Sondheim. Sondheim's, on West Side Story was just lyrics. Maybe that's
Everybody starts out,
But I suppose also there were only certain artists at that time that were accepting outside songs, and that would have been the disco world and the dance world.
Well, there's always someone that's gonna want a great song, whether that And I'm, look, again, I'm really lucky because so many of my songs find, you know, great homes, you know, so.
I wanted to sort of pick your brains on where you think the sort of power ballad came from, because, and I say that because it sort of started in rock, if I'm right, with Styx, and I think Lady was 1973, you know, Dennis DeYoung.
Wow.
But well, if you ask, sorry, guy, because I did that research. I looked up power ballads as well, because you are so, yeah, you know, for, you do everything, Diane, but you are so synonymous with the power ballad. And the thing, I've got a theory. I actually think the first power ballad is "This Is a Man's World" by James Brown.
Yeah, you know, I could see that. Yeah, yeah. I could hear that.
Frankly, I think that's a better pedigree than Styx to come from.
When was Dream On, Aerosmith?
Dream On, was that? Oh, that was 73, 74,
because that was kind of one of the first rock ballads,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but I think that sort of, the fact that sort of someone like Styx could come along and do Lady or Babe or...
But even going back, what about like Layla?
Nah, it's too fast.
Or, yeah.
Oh, it's more rock. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you go right back, you're probably talking about Frank Sinatra and Strings, you know,
it's more the intensity thing, isn't it? It's the power of guitars being big without being fast. I think that was the...
Right. Now you're right. I'm just trying to think.
But in a way, you know, if it started with those heavy rock bands, it kind of made sense that at some point, you know, this, your big hit was going to happen through, come from a very unexpected group. You know, I mean, to have Aerosmith.
Yeah, we've never done an outside song except, I think, Come Together, which doesn't count because it's a Beatles song.
But it
was their first number one. And they probably loved it and hated that at the same time.
It's an amazing record. And it, you know, it's just...
I remember hearing that for the first time and just going... Because I wasn't in the studio when they did that and just going... Like, I never thought they would ever do my song.
I remember it in the film. But it did become that thing. I mean, just, it gets to the point for you, Tom, where it's like, it's sort of mandatory. If one goes to see a big blockbuster movie, then your song is at the end of it.
Sometimes, some of them, I walk out
if it isn't. I leave. If it's not one of your songs, that's it, I'm out.
But you know, the kind of that Aerosmith song sort of established the architecture, didn't it, of how to make one of those records. Was that something that you'd always had as your secret weapon, that knowledge of building a track? Or was that
I didn't produce that song or anything. I mean, that was Master Letic. I mean, I wrote the song and I thought it was a great song, and I didn't even necessarily hear it as a rock ballad. I heard it as a big ballad, you know, but give credit to the band and to Master Letic, because they made that the great record it is, and still to this day it still stands.
Absolutely, yeah, no question of that.
Unquestionably. And if talk about some other rock stars that you work with, obviously Meatloaf. How did you get to sort of hang with him?
Yeah, I met him, and you know, that was actually one of the few times I wrote a song for somebody. You know, was Not a Dry Eye in the House, and I'd Lie for You, and That's the Truth. You know,
guys, right? And so Meatloaf.
Thank you. Yeah. I know, it's a great Meatloaf title, right? You know, he did a bunch of my songs, actually. I love great singers. I love big dramatic voices and great voices, and it's sad that we lost him. We've lost so many great artists. It's just sad. And I'm glad you guys in the UK appreciate good singers. I think you do more than they do in America.
That's interesting. What makes you say that?
Just the kind of artists that get signed with you guys. And you know, even like with Belinda, you know, just wanted to break, you know, get the record started there, as we know that people appreciate great artists and someone that's been around that still has a lot to give.
Yeah, actually, and she's here so much. Yeah. She plays here so much, doesn't she? She's almost, we kind of think of her almost as one of our artists, you know.
In a way. Yeah, she's amazing. And by the way, she is better than ever. I Get Weak, you know, in the 80s with her. You know, which is one of my favorite records ever. Yeah. And I think she sounds better. I think this record we just did is just, I mean, I'm not objecting. I think it's fucking awesome.
No, we'll talk about it. I just want to, while you're on I Get Weak, I mean, I agree with you. And I think it, for me, I mean, it's one of the handful of records that completely sums up that decade for me. And it's just beautifully emotional. I mean, again, I'm always so intrigued about how you delivered that song to Belinda, and if you met Belinda.
Well, I remember playing it for Rick Knowles, who was producing Stevie Nicks. And I thought it was a really great song for Stevie. And he goes, no, I'm producing Belinda. I go, yeah, that'd be great. And next thing I know, she did it and became a massive record for her. She did another song of mine on the album called World Without You. Like a week was like, yeah, you're right, just epitomizes, you know, just the sound of that record. It's, you just hear that, you know, first intro, and it just kind of takes you back. And then I, you know, ran into her son, you know, at a place called the Coffee Bean in L.A.
Oh, yeah, we know the Coffee Bean.
You know, I love the Ice Blend and Mochas. Come on, bring them on. I want one right now. I was sitting there, and this guy came up to me, and he goes, hi, you know, I'm Belinda's son. I went, what? She has a son? I've been so out of touch with her for, like, decades, really. And, you know, I said, call her right now. So we FaceTimed her, and I'd just written, like, literally 2 weeks ago, I'd just written Big, Big Love, you know, and I love the song. And a lot of times I'm always writing songs. I'm like, I have no idea who this is for. And, you know, I wrote that. I go, I know this is a fucking hit, but for who? And then while I was with Belinda, I'm like, I mean, we were on FaceTime. I go, come to my studio. She goes, okay. And I think she was like, shit, what if I go there? And she plays me a bunch of shitty songs or something, you know? And you know, so I think she was a little hesitant. And she came over and you know, loved the song, and I played some other ones, and we just got to work, and it was so easy and so comfortable, and I just think we made it. She made a great record, you know. If You Go is the next single.
Her voice is amazing. Her voice is amazing, right? On it. It's still full of all the youthful vitality. It's got such sheen.
Yeah, she still sounds like a kid, and she sounds better. And Big, Big Love is doing great there. If You Go is next. I think Deeper Into You.
And can I say, it's got a little 80s sound, which I think is really just, that's what people want, you know?
Yeah,
it's
modern too, that sonically it's 80s, but it's very current. That's the
But you ended up doing 5 tracks with her. Why, could you not wait and do the album and do the, you know, make a 10, or does it, is
well,
EP
wanna do
an,
I want to do a full album if she's down, because I already have the songs for that, you know, but this kind of turned into an EP, and everybody's really excited. I love that it's getting great reviews, and everybody's calling me in different countries. You know, someone just called me from Italy today going, oh my God, I'm in the gym. I'm hearing Big, Big Love. I'm like, yes.
Wow.
But it's funny. I'm glad that she loved what she heard, and it turned out, and we all love a comeback.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's called Kismet, which is you bumping into her son, I guess.
It was total, like, and I guess he never goes to that Coffee Bean, so it was just like one of these. And what if he came there an hour earlier? I came there. I mean, none of this would have happened. So, I think that is the perfect name for this record. Yeah. And you know, I was talking about art. We were talking about artists doing songs. It's so funny. So I wrote a song called "Only Love Can Hurt Like This" that Paloma Faith did. It's actually one of the biggest TikTok songs now ever. You know, and it was a massive hit for her, I guess it was eight or nine years ago. And so funny, that was another kind of thing where I wrote that song, and that one, it could have easily been a 3-4 song. And I had no idea who would do it, and someone played me Paloma. I go, oh my God, that's who has to do it. And so I tracked her down, like we were talking about. I found out when she was coming to LA, we had dinner, and she goes, I don't even want to know about, I said, I have a song for you. She said, I don't want to know about it because I write my own songs. I go, yeah, but what if this one changes your life? You know, you should be open to it. She's like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. And then I go, well, let me just, when you go back to England, I'll play it on the phone to you. You know, like, you know, you have nothing to lose. So I called her. She was like, ugh. You know, she wasn't happy that I called her. And then I played her the song. And I went to, so what'd you think? And she wasn't there. She emailed me, it's the best song I ever heard. I'm coming out. I'm recording it. And then it began, she won the Brit. It was a number one record for her there. But no one ever heard it really. Like in America, well, some people heard it, but no one really knew who she was. But then, I don't know, all of a sudden on TikTok, it became this massive viral, you know, there's like 5 billion impressions of it or something.
I just want to just finish off on that particular point, because you just said, you know, it might change your life.
Yeah, and it did.
And actually, that is what Diane Warren does, right? Because you did it to Cher with Turn Back Time. You reinvented her. You did it to Aerosmith. I mean, it's not uncommon for you to reinvent an artist's life.
So people should just
life.
Shut the fuck up and listen to me. just kidding.
There's a lot of people out there who must be very grateful.
Yeah, no, some really are. You know, some really are. I'm grateful that they're letting me do that. So
I was just wondering, because you were saying about it being a massive thing blowing up on TikTok, and what are what your thoughts are on how that has changed the landscape? And like, for instance, apparently it's changed the way people write songs. A lot of songs that people feel they have to start with the chorus because they've only got 40 seconds.
Someone could take the chorus out of the song though and put it on TikTok. That doesn't mean you have to start with the chorus. So I don't write songs for TikTok. I try to write great songs.
No. Yeah, but I was wondering how you find it's changed people's perception of songs.
I mean, it's changing label. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, look, I'm just happy when my songs get heard anyway, whether it's TikTok or radio or anything, movies. But the crazy thing is when labels are signing somebody off of TikTok, because TikTok is like lightning striking. You know, you don't know, like, I have no idea, like, with how Only Love Can Hurt Like This, with some random thing that catches fire, or, you know, some of these artists, maybe one song catches fire, but they don't have anything else. And it's really 20 seconds of a song. And I had something recently that I did, that this great song was in a movie, and I had all these artists that wanted to do it, and they go, they went with an artist from a TikTok, basically viral TikTok. I'm like, no, that's like, don't go with that, because that's a one-off, you know. Well, Mario's played from Belinda.
Big love.
I'm not telling people to call me, but.
but I tell you where else it's interesting, this thing, this digital thing that Guy's talking about and streaming, is if you know, you've got a record, How Do I Live, which is in the top 10 Billboard all time best selling, top 100, and I think, you know, it's
what number is it?
It's currently a number 6. I know it's been up to number 4 and it's probably even been higher, but the top is a song that's the most streamed, and it's, you know, The Weeknd, and then you've got like The Weeknd, then you've got The Twist, then you've got proper records like your own that are in there that have not been big streaming records, and then the streamers come along and they can easily surpass everybody. It doesn't seem fair.
Well, and it's also not, you know,
it's like counting the radio plays.
Yeah, the real test is longevity, isn't it? You know, you could have a big streaming record, no one's going to know about it in a year, right?
Well, also, you know, if you're a fan, you can just kind of do multiple streams, whereas you wouldn't buy 100 copies, but you can play it 100 times just
to
skew the numbers.
They got
to
figure that out too, because it's not really fair what they're paying publishers and songwriters, as you know.
We were talking about titles earlier, and I still think Unbreak
My Heart
is such a great word.
Unbreak
My Heart is such a great title. Well, and you get a song. Is that something that comes out after the tune, during the tune, or was that definitely I've got to keep that one?
That came with the chorus, and I was in this, when I did that key change in it, and it kind of, I don't know. I can't remember if I had the title before or for just, I think it came with those chords. I don't think of it. It's so weird with me. Yeah, I'm just so, like, I'm so on to the next song. I don't think about what I did.
The one thing that can't be said about you is that you've become cynical in the years, because your enthusiasm is incredible.
Yeah, I'm not.
Your
I'm
hunger.
Not cynical.
Your hunger. It's like
I'm starving. I'm starving. I literally am. I'm not cynical at all about music. I'm cynical about the music business. Because how can you not be? But about the music and about writing songs, I fucking love it.
And it doesn't feel like work when you go in and write songs.
No, it's what I love. It's like breathing, you know, or like just my favorite thing. I mean, I like breathing, and then I need to do it, but I just love to do it.
Do you feel that sometimes when you write those songs and they don't get used, that they're like children that you've had that have gone unrecognized?
Yeah, and I've got a bunch of them, and some of them are my best songs, but they'll see the light of day. They'll see the light of day.
Well, that's a great thing to be able to say, because there's so many songwriters I, you know, have come across, myself included, where, you know, you work with the fact that most of your songs are never actually going to go anywhere.
I hope most of them do, but you know.
Is that why you just did your solo album recently?
That was like me being a DJ. That was really fun, and I did that to kind of show my diversity too, of what diverse styles, you know, because you had Santana and Celine Dion, and then you had G-Eazy and Ty Dolla $ign and Maren Morris, you know, and John Legend. So everything was kind of
It's like a nuts playlist if you look at it as a list of artists. It's fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic broad ranging.
I'm really proud of that record. I love Seaside, you know, which was Rita Ora and a Mexican group called Reek and Sofia Reyes. I still think that song is going to come back. I just do. And some of these records, we didn't have singles rights, which was a fucking bummer. And now, and I learned a lesson.
Sorry, what does that mean?
No, the artist from the label, because it was on BMG.
Oh, wow.
It was fucked, you know.
You can't do the old, the thing we used to love looking for on labels, which is appears courtesy of.
Yeah, well, they did for the record, but they still wouldn't be a primary artist.
But right. couldn't you pick up the phone to the artist, though, I guess?
I did in some things. Well, we're trying the label, you know, whatever. I'm still proud of the record. There's some great songs on there.
And having Santana on there, Carlos, must have been...
Yeah, Carlos Santana and G-Eazy. That song was blowing up. The video was doing great. We thought we had singles rights, and the label goes, no, you can't have them. I'm like, fuck.
Were you in the room with Carlos playing?
No, he did that in Hawaii.
Yeah, because that's the thing now. Everyone can, you know, send it off and get it done somewhere else. We all do that.
It's also when you're, you know, different. You know, this record I did for this movie, 80 for Brady, which has Dolly Parton, Belinda, Debbie Harry, and it was done. Everybody was in different places. Belinda was in Mexico City. Gloria was in Miami. You know, Dolly was in Nashville. So everybody just kind of did it their own way.
What do you think about the? I just want to get your feelings on the Ed Sheeran court case, and not actually about Ed, but just this idea of copywriting grooves and stuff. It doesn't really, because it could affect you.
It doesn't make any sense. But I'm glad he won that case, you know, because you can't copyright a chord progression. That's just fucking nuts. You know?
Like, I mean, C a minor F G. Yeah. I mean, how many people have used that? You know.
I know. I mean. It's crazy. So copyright infringement, I thought, was like notes of a melody and stuff. So it's getting a little crazy. People are getting like too easy with that shit. So I'm glad I'm glad they didn't win that case and that he prevailed on that.
Have you got a film coming out this year that's going to go into next year's Oscars?
I think I have a few. I hope. No, I mean, I think I have a few potential. 80 for Brady, the song I did with the Dolly Parton one, Gonna Be You, which I'm so proud of. I love that record. That potentially, I have like two others I'm not talking about yet, but big movies. It's fun.
That's so great that you have this sort of place of being the movie writer. I mean, that's kind of, you know, you have these massive, massive pop hits, but you are so synonymous with the movie song, which is such a great thing to be. Hollywood association as much as anything.
Well, it's really cool because I always loved songs and movies when I was a kid. Yeah. And in fact, like November, I got the honorary Oscar and they've never given that to a songwriter before. And I don't know the next time they will, but they gave it to me and it was the best night ever. And Cher.
You mentioned our mate, Don Black.
Yeah. Yes, I love him. I love him. I talked about him in my acceptance speech.
Yeah,
he's Born Free. In fact, he co-wrote two of my favorite movie songs, To Sir With Love. Also,
that's right.
You know, those and Born Free are my two favorite movie songs.
Who's written the most movie songs? Is it someone like Sammy Khan or
probably.
Someone? I don't know. I mean, who's written? Well, is it you? It's got to be you, right?
No. It'd be someone who wrote musicals, though, wouldn't it?
Probably. And there's a bunch of people that have done movie songs.
And you don't fancy musicals, do you? There's a jukebox musical, isn't there? But you don't fancy writing a musical, Diane?
There's kind of a jukebox one. I mean, kind of a jukebox one being done on me right now, but there'll be new songs, too, not just jukebox. Because if it's just jukebox, it's so boring, like, to me, because I always want to do new songs for it.
Because I guess you want to be an ego.
But the idea of a story...
That'd be fun. Right now, I'm an ego.
You're an ego.
This is Emmy, Grammy, Golden Globe, which I don't think counts, but to me it does. And honorary Oscar, so there's an Oscar in there, so I'm an ego.
Ego.
I still haven't won the competitive Oscar, so I'm...
And an Ivor Novello. I was there when you got your Ivor Novello, by the way.
Yes, that was really cool.
I applauded.
Thank you.
Yes.
I saw a picture of that and I was really, like, I had this really ugly jacket on. And it's like, why did I wear it? But that's a big honor. So I remember that. That was awesome.
Diane, thank you so much for coming on speaking to us.
Great to talk to you.
Well, your enthusiasm is definitely infectious. I feel like I, you know, I need to definitely work. In fact, you have inspired me towards the piano.
Go on, get off and Write something. Great to talk to you guys.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
And you, good luck with the album and with Belinda's single.
Thank you.
Well, you know what, Guy? The thing that occurred to me during that interview is living in LA definitely helps in whatever you're doing in this world of showbiz.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you got to bump into people on planes or going into an Al-Anon meeting or coming out of one.
I think going into that's probably the most peak LA thing. I know, it's exactly, I mean, because where else would that happen? Can you imagine? I bumped into Cher in Primark in Huddersfield. And that's how...
Yeah, and it did make me want to go to LA, actually, because I could see the LA scene outside of her window there behind
her. Yeah, but there was all that traffic noise. That was putting me off.
The pollution. Yeah, you can get wheezy, can't you?
You can get wheezy, Gal, especially at our age.
But no, inspiring person. I mean, and just, you know, full of lust for life, of creativity.
It's that, but what's it? Because it's what's interesting is that there's the mountain which she climbed, and then she just reclimbs the mountain again and again again, doing the range, you know. But it's not like, it's like once you've ticked that box or those boxes, all you can do is tick them again. I mean, I don't mean that in any sort of belittling way. I mean, it's an amazing.
And is the mountain in LA? The mountains in LA.
What are they called? San Bernardino. No.
Yeah, but the metaphorical San Bernardino.
Yes.
Right, okay. We're rambling. So I'm going to go off and try and write a song.
Oh, would you?
Steven Tyler.
It was you who pointed out. It's funny. I was wondering, by the way, if you were going to do this, or I was thinking if you were, maybe I should, but then perhaps it's probably best that neither of us did. Because it was you who pointed out that, was it, she's written something like 14 or 16 songs with the word don't in the title?
No, it's not just the word don't in the title. It's the word don't at the beginning of the title, which is an interesting thing, you know, because and they were all successful. So that idea of, you know,
positive
rejection.
Yeah, yes.
That's what, don't do this, don't do that. You know, I mean, that's what people like to hear. Don't buy
it's my punk,
record.
Isn't it? I don't want to.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Can I do this? But
yes.
Thank you for listening.
It's your turn.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to our producer, Ben Jones, of Give Me Sugar, for making this work. And don't forget to sign up if you want extras, which we're working harder. And anything else, Guy?
No, I was just going to say the extras, which I must say are really good fun.
They are. And can I say, next week is a live show, right?
Very, very exciting. In fact, yeah, next time you hear us, we will either be coming down from the heights of our fabulous success, or we'll be nursing broken wings.
No, I think we're actually on stage. The next time they hear us is a recording from The Screen in the Green.
Right. Sorry. Yes. I really made a mess of that. So, yes, the next time you hear us, we will be live on the screen at The Green. Yes. And then the time after that will be something like this.
Yeah, right.
Fucking lost it.
Okay.
I've lost it.
Thank God we're sold out.
This is rubbish.
Unless they're sending tickets back, this is rubbish. All right, it's good night
It's good night from them.
Rock On Tours is produced by Gimme Sugar Productions for Warner Music Group UK.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.